Hi, I'm Lisa Smith Henderson, and I'm so glad to have with us today Natasha and Brett on the podcast, Alma, Am I Racist? If you want to find out a little bit more about who Alma was, you can go to the website, almaamiracist.com. We are an anti-racist, pro-Black podcast specifically aimed at educating white people. So Brett and Natasha are a mixed race couple, and I'm so glad to have them here today because we haven't had a mixed race couple on or an interracial couple on the podcast to tell us about what some of the challenges are. And in doing this podcast, Brett, I learned a lot about white privilege. And I have a feeling your lovely wife has probably been able to educate you some. So I'd love to hear from both of you. Just kind of your love story. How did you meet and what was it like?
Natasha, would you like to start?
I mean, it's been a while, but I think I kind of met Brett at the height of online dating. It was a lot less traditional then, but it was still for the same reasons. Like, we were both super busy professionals and we connected online, and then we kept swearing that we were going to meet for coffee. Then we kept saying we were going to meet for lunch, and then
I forced her to meet me, basically. So no, I'm kidding.
We had good chemistry, but I was like, oh my God. Oh yeah, I mean, you know, there were a lot of different reasons. The interracial aspect, you were several years older than me. But I think, you know, I was always, man, I don't know how I'm going to take this white guy to the hood, because that's where, you know, where I came from. But so I had worked, become a professional and everything. And I was kind of like, you know, living a city life. But, you know, I grew up in a very economically depressed neighborhood, and that is where all my family still lives. And so that's where, you know, my mind just went through all of these little boxes. Okay. So then I really did get sick, and you were like, no, now you can't get rid of me. And you have to pass the same pharmacy. And there is, and I know you have to eat. There's a restaurant on the corner. Let's just meet there. And true, I did have to pass that restaurant. So we finally met. And, you know, oddly enough, when I sat in the booth, I was like, I'm going to marry this guy. I could tell.
You knew. You just
I
knew.
Did.
I was that charming and handsome, man. That's true. No, you know, it's funny is that when you find out that you have so much in common, you know, I thought at first I was like, she's got to be putting me on. You know, we liked so much of the same things. And that's the funny part is I think people think that we are all so different, and we're not. You know, TV shows growing up, we watched and liked a lot of the same TV shows or movies or things that, because, you know, if you think about when we were younger, how many different shows there were. Not, you know, now there's so many options and choices, but back then, Saturday Night Live, or, you know, she watched it. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. You like this, that, and
Bon
she, of course
Jovi.
I do. Yeah. Or, you know, Bon Jovi. I mean, you know, music that I thought there's no way this girl really likes that. She one of those weird girls that says she likes things just because she thinks a guy would like to hear her say that. And she's the exact opposite. Of course, that's not her personality at all, but we were just honest about things that we liked. And I'm like, gosh, we have so much in common. This is kind of funny. I would
and
have never
we
expected.
Really did drink cheap wine and sing Bon Jovi in the kitchen.
Right.
So.
So it was love. So Natasha, was part of your stalling about the idea of him being white and what would your family say?
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Talk a little bit about that, would you?
Well, okay. So my grandmother, you know, God rest her soul, she is recently deceased. Her parents were slaves. We have a direct, and actually, you know, so my family had land, as some slave owners really did fulfill the promise of giving them land. And so there was a guy in our family, and I mean, it made the news and everything. It was a really, really big deal. So I'm just saying all this to kind of frame how I was afraid. Yeah, I was. I was scared to bring your mom. Yeah. Because of all that, my grandmother still alive at the time and being direct descendants of slaves. And I'll never forget as a teen, because I was going to school with, so where we're from, they even had this program called the desegregation program. And it was busing inner city children into suburban areas. And you were literally the only speck in the crowd. I mean, it did fail. You know, my class was the last one, but, you know, because it was traumatic. And I had never been around white people. And I am 16 years old in high school. So it was, you know, like culture shock for me, culture shock for them. And I was talking to my grandma and telling her all this stuff. And I, you know, and that was when she shared, you know, her upbringing with me. And she was like, I got to tell you, I don't like crackers. And she went on to tell me the story about how she, as a young girl, she was not even 10 yet. She witnessed someone being lynched. And even now, that's really difficult to think of. And I remember feeling a little dumb because I was just complaining about, you know, white girls being mean to me and making fun of my hair and my African features and things. So I had all that, those hurdles to get over introducing him to my family. And he can tell you, we dated for maybe like 2 or 3 years, really, before.
Wow.
And he felt, you know, and I really honestly had no intent. I was sort of at a point where, like, if he doesn't mention it, I won't. But he did kind of start pushing, like, it's important for me to know where you come from. And that touched me too, because that's another part of being in an interracial relationship. You do have to delve into each other's worlds. He needs to know where I come from to understand why I am the way I am. And I need to see where he came from. And so that night was also eventful. But yes, I eventually took him. And it was this little bitty house in the ghetto. It was run down and it was teeming with family, because I have a huge family. And they were
God bless you.
To see the white.
Oh, bless you.
And I'll never forget, one of my nieces was like, Titi, what's that blue stuff in his arms? And I was like, oh dear, those are his veins. I know, we usually.
I mean,
and this is in the new millennium, because we, you know, Brett and I, we met like, I don't know, 2012, 13, something like that. But I'm just saying this to say, this was not so long ago. And wow. I literally had people in my family never laid eyes on a white person except through the TV. I was like, this is like a reverse Christopher Columbus sort of thing, because all but like my entire family was there. Like the house was full. And it was funny because when we pulled up before we even got out of the car, you could hear the people in there like talking, and it was an uproar. And then when he walks in, it was so quiet.
Oh,
I got used to that. Yeah. It was always funny because people would get more quiet around me. Like they don't know how I'm going to react, or they don't want to be those people that look a certain way around the white person or whatever. And, you know, I experienced that going to church with her or to functions and things. And I always just like, just people relax, you know, it's like, but it is.
They grew to know him. It would be like, oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. He not him. Like it would be like, oh, he's not white. He can come in here. Like, you know, it would be just, but I will say this about Black people. We are probably some of the most accommodating. Like when your intentions are genuine, and I think that so many of us can tell because we are so used to ulterior motives, disingenuous motives. That was something that I can, you know, because I've been around white people. Something that stuck out so much with Brett and his family was they really were non-judgmental. I never had a moment where they made me feel less than because I came from, and Brett knows my whole background, and it's sad, you know, it's traumatic. And you know, all byproducts of just the disproportionate everything in, you know, race in America. But that was the one thing I will say about these white folk. I always felt comfortable around them. I did.
I think the big thing too is that, you know, I came as just me. I never ever tried to be urban or act, you know, I don't know how else to put it. I never tried to act like I was cool. I was just me. And I think that's the other thing that made a difference is that sometimes people try to act or they want to talk a certain way that they think Black people would like them or appreciate them more, or, you know, say things in a way that makes them seem more cool or whatever the case is. And, you know, you end up sounding kind of silly or looking
yes,
silly.
Yes, because we hate that shit. We do not like that.
No.
And it feels like you are, it feels like
disingenuous. Yeah, it's
kind of like mocking. And that was something that my entire family complimented him on. I remember my aunt was like, I thought he was going to act like Eminem. I like
nope.
this.
I'm Marshall Mathers. I'm Marshall Mathers. I'm not Eminem. I'm Marshall Mathers. I'm like, when Eminem goes to court, that's what I look like. And that's how I am. And that's, you know, and that's really, I think, the biggest thing is that, you know, if you come as you, Black people will be cool with that, because it's like, if you just come as you, you may be corny, you may be whatever, but you are you as a person. That's all that matters. You know, that's why I think when Natasha said that, you know, Black folks are more accepting, they are, when people just are who they are. Because growing up, if you had no money, you didn't have anything, you know, no gaming system, so you just had family and each other, you laugh a lot, you tell stories, it's about just being yourself, being comfortable. That's all that is life a lot of times, is just, you know, having family around or friends or whoever, and just being yourselves and just relaxing. You know, white people, we like to talk about work. When we're at parties, we like to, you know, get in. And it's like, no, don't do she. I remember Natasha said, don't talk about work. Don't talk, you know, when we're at a party, just lay off that subject, because it's like, we're off work. Black folks don't want to talk about work when they're not at work, you know. And I understand that, you know, and it is. It's really more about just relax. At the end of the day, you let everything else go and just have a good time, you know. And I think that's where, when you see people at church, it's so different, you know, it's a whole different experience. There's a lot of going, you know, I'd walk up to Black folks, you know, into by their houses. And I'm like, when I hear people getting loud, I'm like, are they happy loud? Or is this are they upset loud? I have to, you know, you have to kind of judge. Yeah. Well, you know, and sometimes it takes a moment for me, because I'm like listening. I'm like, okay, they're laughing. Everything's good. You know? So, because I was in sales, and I had to do a lot of sales calls in all kinds of different areas. And so, you know, and I had to learn a lot of different things, you know, that about the areas that I was going into, or else I would have been in real danger sometimes. So, and that's the thing. It's, you really do just have to come as you are, and people will accept who you are and just be genuine about it. And I think that's the thing, that when people try to be fake, or they try to come in as Black people, really just want things to be fair, you know? And I think sometimes that's the big thing, that people, oh, they want free stuff, this and this and that, and they want to give a handouts and all that. They just want everything to be equal and fair. If you come in and say, things did not work out, we did our best, we couldn't provide this or that, but we got this done. If you are genuine, you say, we tried our best, and here's what we have, and you're honest about it and open and make the real effort, Black people can accept bad news. They accept bad, you know, bad news all the time, unfortunately, you know? And I think that's the thing. It's kind of like, if you're just real with people and are just genuine, you know, it's a lot more of a experience that is fair and equitable. It's just how you should treat everybody, of course, you know?
I do think it goes back to that, because like you said, I, you know, born as a Black woman, I think I would be somewhat of an authority on, but I have never in all of my Black life sat anywhere where there were people and we were just like, yeah, we want some handouts, we want somebody to get, no, we, and in fact, the biggest theme in all of the conversations that I have with girlfriends and just in general is equality, just across the board. Like, Black people are not trying to take anything, we are not trying, but you know, we're here, and it goes really, like I said, it goes back to respect, it goes back to us You know, because we deserve it. We, at the end of the day, I do wish a lot that white people would get out of their safety net or their zones. The way white people can compartmentalize their lives and not deal with people that don't look like them, that in itself is a privilege, because if you never have to come and mingle with, quote unquote, the common folk, then how do you relate to them? How do you, you're going to be afraid of them. You have all of these misconceptions about them. And I think, like, that is my biggest thing. I wish that white people would take the initiative. You know, we're not scary. We're not. And in fact, sometimes you scare me a little more, you know what I mean? So
yeah,
it's a lot more scary for black people than people, white people realize, because, you know, walking down the street for me, I can go, I made this joke with Natasha many times. I can go basically anywhere except for a few places, and I'll explain why. But I can go into a bank, honestly, and if I've got the right color sweater on, I can ask them to go inspect the vaults, you know, and say, hey, I'm from corporate, you know, blah, blah. We actually were at a bank that one time. Remember, she thought I worked there.
You did that.
I had this green sweater on, and that was their color. And they're like, oh, and I thought I was like a manager or some regional manager.
It was a Regions bank, and they were about to walk you into the vault.
I was joking around, and then next thing you know, they're just like, but that's the thing. But there are, so I can go pretty much anywhere.
But
do what I
my
want.
Black but. Ass, I can't even return an item to a department store with my valid driver's license, the method of payment, and, you know, the doctor that birthed me saying I am who I am. You know what I mean?
I have to return.
I mean, I'm being facetious, but that is another one of my big triggers. Like, I make Brett do it. I make Brett return my items.
I do it happily because I don't want any problems for her. It's sad that she goes back to a store, has, like she said, everything in order, has the bag that she bought it in, has the items in perfect condition, not used, has her receipt, has the method of payment, and then she still gets trouble. Well, I don't know if we can give you, we might have to use store credit. Let me talk, you know, and then I go back with the same items. They will refund it. How did it fit okay, sir? Ma'am, it's a woman's dress. I didn't wear it. I don't know. You know, I'm like, it just, you know, and I'll return the items, you know, full refund back, no problem. And so I just do.
That
I
happened to me.
It happens all
several
the time.
Times at a department store. And Brett literally, I mean, he one time he went in my trunk and was like, what are you doing? Why do you have all this stuff?
She has anxiety
like
about returning
that pretty
things.
Woman moment where she was like, I have all this money and they won't help me. But that's what happened. And so Brett then took all these items back to the store and they refunded him. And so he didn't say, which I think it was like kind of smart of him. He didn't say anything. He let her refund him. She did so happily, didn't ask a single question. Then he ripped into her. It, you know, like, good. Now, why was my wife given a hard time about returning these things? You know, the receipt's still valid, et cetera. And he made such an impact with his statement that I received, you know, a really generous gift card and a handwritten apology from this big major department store. Yes. And good. So but this is the part that is sad, where I feel sad, is that even now in today's day, as great of a person as I am super friendly. And I actually love people. Like I like to meet people and I like to laugh, exchange, but I still, no matter how nice, no matter how polite, I get that. And then I have to go get my white husband, and the same clerk or the same is now so much nicer and it's now so accommodating. He has gotten out of this habit, but it would be like, then he would drag me back and be like, yeah, now look at my wife. What you did is discrimination, and apologize to her. Like, he would really, but you know, that also too touched me, because he was just as disgusted by it as, like, you know, as if he were Black. But, you know, not all Black people have that sort of, because one of my girlfriends was like, oh, you're so lucky. It's like you have dual citizenship. And that's sad. Yeah.
Well, you know, and it's really, it's so difficult because it is so exhausting having to deal with this all the time, you know.
Yes,
and that's where,
being my white,
you know,
representative.
Yeah, because, well, no, not for me, but for Black people. I'm saying it because, you know, it's almost like we're white people, like, well, I got a speeding ticket once.
Well, but
yeah,
Brett,
sure
let me
did,
ask
you know?
You this, because, and here is another, I know we're all over the place, but this, I want to speak to the thing about how white people, like, they perceive Black people as just, we always have an attitude or chip on their shoulder. At one point, my husband got like that. And it was strictly from dealing with my discrimination. That is, I think, Brett has a super unique perspective in that if you see Black people and they don't respond well to other people of color, you may have to wonder, like, okay, what have their experiences been with white people? Because a lot of times that animus is really, if you dig beneath the surface of that, it's fear. We are literally afraid because we're so tired of trying to prove to white people that we're not here to hurt you. We are just trying to live our lives and et cetera, et cetera. And you get tired of respectability politics with a politician who is not hearing you. So I think, you know, just speaking to that, because Brett would, and we had this little joke, like I used to call him my white knight because quite literally I would get in bed. Oh gosh. And a lot of times it was like, they really liked to embarrass me in stores. I mean, I had a woman ask me, did you even get this? Did you even pay for this? While she was inspecting my receipt, you know? So yes. So
we just had a guy ask her at a grocery store, ma'am, can you afford to buy this?
Yes.
And it was a toaster, a $40. Yes. And like, luckily, and I know it's kind of funny because we're in Dallas. And so Dallas is actually a much more progressive city. You know, we come from St. Louis. St. Louis is one of the most divided cities, Detroit, yes. St. Louis. Some of these cities that you would not, I mean, you would think, you know, Detroit and St. Louis, they're kind of Midwestern, but they are very divided. And physically actually dividing. There's a dividing point. I know in St. Louis, they call it the Del Mar Divide. It's Del Mar Street. On one side, it's Black. Ooh. The other side, it's white. In Detroit, they actually have that what is it, the 8 Mile or whatever. You know,
oh,
there's an actual
yes.
physical division. Same thing in St. Louis. So, you know, and so you have in Dallas, it's a little more progressive. There's a lot of people influenced from like California or other East or West Coast, whatever the case is. So I know somebody, the guy at the grocery store was like, ma'am, can you afford this? It's a $40 toaster. One of the other guys that like piped up in line was like, I just saw her driving in a BMW. I think she can afford it. If not, he's like, she don't have it. I'll pay for it right now. You know, and he kind of got after the guy and a couple of other people piped up in St. Louis. That wouldn't have happened.
Oh yeah.
You know, it would have been, you know, other people looking in scorn. Well, can she afford it? Well, she has, you know, nice clothes on, drives it, you know, I put her in a nice car. You know, there's just, you know, it's sad that she, I think it's also the fact that she has nice things and she looks nice, that it really drives some people crazy. And they think that either that she didn't pay for it or that somehow that's things that are not hers, or they're just disgusted that a woman would actually look in nicer things than what they have on. And I think, I know that it all sounds a little crazy to say to somebody,
well,
but it's
that makes sense.
Sadly enough, you know, we've been so busy that honestly, I meant to just come down so hard on that store. And you just get to the point where sometimes you just don't have time. You know, you've got a family.
Because it's an everyday thing.
It happens, right. If you did everything all the time and you acted in a way where you just really had tried to address these things.
Yes.
It is tiring. It is exhausting sometimes. And people just don't get it. It's like, why is this person all worked up? Because this is not the first time today. This is the fourth time today.
Oh my God.
And it's like, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, if this happened to you every day, you would be, white people would lose their minds. You know, one thing I wanted to mention is that, you know, when we ask about white privilege, one of the things that I think people say, well, I've never got a job for being white privilege, or I've never got this or that. Well, have you ever been denied anything for being white?
Right.
The answer is no. You didn't walk into an interview and they're like, oh, that guy's too white. There's no way, you know, we didn't want to hire more white people. Or it, but it, as a black person, if you walk in and you see the demeanor of that person change, you see the, you know, you immediately know, I'm not going to get this job. That has never happened to, that doesn't happen to white people. That's white privilege. I think people try to always say, well, I wasn't handed anything. I had to earn everything. You were never denied housing for being white. You were never, you know, it's, it goes both ways. It's not, it, when privilege happens, it's not sometimes what they perceive as an enhancement. It is also a denial on the other side when you're not white. It's being denied housing. Housing denial has been a thing. It still is, you know, and I mean, they outlawed it back in the late 60s, early 70s. They had to make actual laws, you know, that, that stated you can't. And but they still do it till today. It still is something that is a part of our fabric of society today. But the point is that privilege is not where you get more things. It's you're not denied quite a bit as well. And I think that's a huge part of it.
And I think your example of returning something to a store. It's see, I never would have thought of that. That's white privilege. I might not even have my receipt. It's sort of like, oh, we know you. So that is.
And if you speak up for yourself and try to defend yourself, you are perceived as a troublemaker. And therefore, I'm going to call security. Oh, my gosh. I am trying to just defend myself. And, you know, and it's a hassle all the time. It's never. If there was a day where a black person could just go through and not be overnoticed, it would be a great day. When I say that, it's like, and it, that's
where
sad.
You could blend
but it's true.
In.
Yes.
Just blend in. You don't, you know, the police officer driving down the street doesn't take a look at your plates to try to run them. Or if you're at the store, you can literally just walk through, not be followed or bothered, purchase your
items.
You know what?
I will say that just one day, I do wish that I could drive past a police cruiser and not get a double take. It never fails. Even today, didn't that cop double take? Oh, and you know what else? When we were first dating, we were so freaking lovey-dovey. I mean, we were so lovey-dovey. People thought we were fake. I mean, we would live.
Well, they would think that she must be, I'm a sugar daddy and or she's, you know, my.
Yes.
You know, whatever.
Because he really did dote on me. And I think people were like, there's no way they could be engaged. That's her sugar daddy. And, you know, saying that to say, but do you remember we were, we had dinner and we were just sitting on the parking lot. Of course we could have just drove off, but we were two kids in love. So we're sitting on the parking lot in our car, completely legal, free to do in America. And we were just talking and we shared a kiss. And then we started laughing, talking. And we were about to pull off and a police car pulls up and he blocks us. So we can't really pull off. And this cop gets out, you know, he's doing that whole plain view thing, looking in the car, trying to see what he can see. So then he just, you know, tells Brett to roll his window down and starts questioning him. You know, the line of question was getting to the point that it was clear this officer thought that I was a hooker with a John.
Oh, dear God.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like.
But no, this was my fiance, and we had actually just left dinner with his family.
It's stuff like that. Can you imagine? You know, and that's.
Yeah.
But that's a daily occurrence, unfortunately.
And
so didn't
he ask us, well, why are you just parked in the parking lot?
Because I want to be. You know, I was like, because I can be. I woke up in a free country, I thought, today.
He was so mild-mannered and such a reserved, very slow to anger, I don't think, because I'm pretty playful myself, so I think, you know, that was something that I loved about him. I can't recall ever seeing him get mad, but throughout the course of our relationship, he's definitely hardened up. You know, they talk about mama bears because, you know, we have biracial kids. He's, you know, he goes nuts over our kids because, you know, he has seen things, you know, happen to me. And over time, there does come a callousness with being Black in America. I don't think, you know, as carefree and happy-go-lucky as I am, I hate to say this because I would never want to be anything other than a Black woman, but it is a gift and a curse. Who do I take all of this to?
Well, because everybody else has their own set of things to do. You know, it's and that's the thing, being a strong Black woman. It's like, well, we all had to be that way. Suck it up and just take, you know, just move on, because what else can you do?
Well, Brett, Natasha, we have covered a lot of ground today, and I really look forward to talking to you further about what the intergenerational healing that's taken place because of your relationship and your marriage, and also what is it like to be parents to mixed race children. So I think we can tackle that next time when we talk on Alma, Am I Racist? If you want to know more about Alma and hear some of the other podcasts, you can go to almaamiracist.com. So Brett, Natasha, thank you all so much for being here, and we're going to do this again next week.
Yes.
Right. Yes. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank y'all.